This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 290, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 290. I'm Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Ron Richards.
Howdy.
This is iFanboy.com's podcast, you see. We do that because we like comics. We run that website, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and then one of us has the job of picking the book that they thought was the best of the week, and they write about it on the website, and then we come talk about it here on the podcast for the first bit. And then we talk about the other books of the week and then, answer some questions, do some vaudeville, whatever. You know, it's fun. Before we get going, we are going to talk about the stuff that happens in the book. So if you don't want to get spoiled, well, don't read anything about Ultimate Spider-Man for the last 6 months because the story was called Death of Spider-Man. Pretty friggin' straightforward. But there are spoilers on other things that you probably don't know what happened in. So if you want to go back and read and come back later, we're cool with that. Connor, you had the pick.
Actually, the spoiler warning is quite important this week because the pick is Rocketeer Adventures number 2. And it seems that most of the stores in the United States didn't get this book. So if you're one of those people who didn't get the book and don't want to get spoiled, although there's really nothing to spoil.
If you want to talk about spoiling, it's if you don't get to read it, then your life is spoiled.
Right, so if you were one of the lucky few who got it, good for you.
I did. It came to San Francisco. I'm holding it in my hand.
If you didn't, I'm sorry. It should be out next week. If you didn't, it's kind of like when Echo comes out to part of the country, but not the whole country.
Yeah.
I guess that's happening with Rocketeer now. The pick was Rocketeer Adventures number 2, and if you remember when the first issue came out, I believe that was when Jim and Paul and I were on the show. We loved that issue. And
yeah, but it wasn't the pick of the week that week. And when I'm not on the show, I'm fine with accepting that fate. Like I was traveling, I couldn't be on the show, I can't do anything. But when I listened to that podcast, when I saw the pick of the week, I literally almost reached through the computer to punch you. Because I don't know how you didn't pick the first issue, and then this issue came out, and I was so glad to see you pick this issue because this is the greatest comic of the week.
Rocketeer Adventures number 2. So I assume this is your pick too, Ron.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, without a doubt.
Me Josh, too. Was this your pick?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Consensus.
Yes.
And it should be noted, I have no Rocketeer
affection.
Yeah, there's no history. There's no anything. I was just like, I'm gonna read this. I didn't read the first one. It doesn't matter.
There's no continuity.
This was a cavalcade of awesome.
That's what I love about the Rocketeer is that there's no continuity. Like aside from the first story, like the first story itself. everything that's come after that have all been these little serials, these little episodes, these little snippets. And even the stuff by Dave Stevens back in the day, like the second story just happened. He just went to New York and it was, you know, like it is.
I love it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's
they just start. The story's already going. You know, that Darwin story.
Yep. Let's play with the Rocket Adventures is an anthology series in that each issue is made up of three stories by a really impressive list of creators so far in these first two issues, including some pinup art and, so, you know, Dave Stevens, who's the creator, and he died not too long ago, a few years ago. It's really a love letter to the Rocketeer and to Dave Stevens. People really like, I think, especially in the industry, people really respect Dave Stevens and the Rocketeer character, who seems straight out of the 40s. He's a homage to those old serial adventure characters, 30s and 40s. Yeah. But he was created in the 80s, and not long after he was created, he got a movie. So you may have seen the Disney film. And as Josh said, I don't have a lot of connection to the Rocketeer. I haven't read all the old Dave Stevens work, but I love the design of the character. Yep. It's such a striking design. It's a great design.
Well, the thing about the Rocketeer is that, you know, yes, as you pointed out in the review, it was done in the 80s, but it was the kind of thing where it was this, you know, there's this hidden secret gem. It was, you know, published in the, you know, in the indie scene of the 80s and not appreciated for years to come, for years after it. And it's really kind of sad that now that Dave Stevens has passed on, that it feels like it's finally getting its due in comics.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So the first story in this issue is written by Mark Waid, drawn by Chris Weston.
How much do you want more Chris Weston comics?
I always want more Chris Weston. He drew Jodhpurs.
Oh, it's not fair.
In this story, I mean, again, these are all little anthology stories. They're not really connected. In this story, the Rocketeer is the character. His name is Kyle. Kyle, right? That's his name?
Cliff.
I'm sorry. Cliff Secord. And
I didn't even know. Like, I'm reading the first couple pages, and I'm like, I don't know who this is. And then I figured it out. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm cool.
Cliff has, and his girlfriend Betty, who's Betty Page, basically. She's a pinup girl, and so in this issue, she's got a gig working in a show where she's mostly nude, and he's all pissed off. There's a creepy guy on set who's hitting on her, and so he goes off. He decides he's going to become rich and famous, so that Betty doesn't have to work anymore, and he's going to use the Rocketeer to do it. Only he's been beaten to the punch because this newfangled character named Superman is out in the comics and he's all popular. So the rival comic book companies have hired an actor to run around town in a costume to draw up publicity for their superhero. And he's already got a movie deal and he's already got endorsement deals. And so in the midst of that, someone takes a couple shots at this new guy. So the Rocketeer swoops in to save him. But while saving him, ends up making the superhero look more super.
Which was awesome, by the way. When that sequence happened, I laughed. Like, it was great.
He falls off a tower. The Rocketeer flies in and saves him. The Rocketeer has a jetpack, and he's got a gun. He's got a helmet. And but the people can't see him behind the giant wings of the superhero. So they think he's flying. They think he's real. And it all blows up in the Rocketeer's face. It comes to find out that the guy shooting at the superhero was his creator, and he was stolen from him by the comic company. So there's a little bit of meta commentary in there about
a little bit of Mark Waid, a little bit of
Mark. Yeah,
but it was tons of fun. It was very fun. And these are all short, like 8-page stories. So you get in and out. And what it is a really good exercise in short storytelling.
Yes,
8 pages. You set it up. You flesh it out and you finish it. And
it had sexy time. It had action. It had Cliff changing just out in the street.
Yeah,
his outfit, which is great. It had one of the things I Chris Weston is so great because he can do these like sort of classic superhero poses. If you look at the page where the guy with the A in his chest stands up and he looks like a hero, and then the next page like he just looks like a weenie.
Yep,
like he's just like eh. I mean, he's been shot, so it's not really his fault, but still.
What I thought was great about on that page when he gets shot at and Arrow Man, who is the superhero, he falls. The middle panel with Rocketeer flying. I like how Chris Weston, you see through the helmet to Cliff's eyes, which not a lot of artists do that. A lot of artists go lazy and just draw the eye hole. But like there's a touch of realism in Chris Weston's cartooning, which
absolutely.
Is great.
And I was thinking that exact same thing. I'm looking at it, like I know what he's going to say.
You can see the stress on just in Cliff's eyes. You can see like, you could almost make out like a bead of sweat. You know what I mean? Like it's just like you get that this isn't easy just by being able to see his eyes, which is amazing. Yep. Yeah.
The second story is probably the highlight. It's a 8-pager from Darwin Cook, written and drawn by Darwin Cook in literally an old serial style. So he takes the conceit of the Rocketeer, which is an old serial character, and makes it into a serial story. There's an opening credits. There's narration. It's a little bit overwrought like the serials were back then. It's very fast paced. It's constructed just like it leads to a climax that's kind of ridiculous and crazy, but it's funny. In this issue, the Rocketeer saving Betty from some thugs. He gets shot in the chest. He's bleeding out. So Betty, who has managed to lose her clothes in the fight, has to don the tunic and helmet and jetpack and get. I keep saying Kyle Secor because Kyle Secor was in Homicide. Cliff Secor to the hospital, but she can't fly the suit because she's never done it before, so she keeps crashing into stuff. It's sort of like a wacky madcap adventure to the hospital. And it sounds very simple, but the way that Darwin tells the story, I mentioned this in my review. When I went back and reread the issue, I did this story without the dialogue balloons, and you can follow every beat of the story without the dialogue through the art.
Yep.
And it's like a textbook case in how to tell a story through just the art. And then, of course, it leads to where she gets into the hospital. Finally, he's all recovered, only to find a giant stack of dynamite under the bed and explodes, and Nazis are in the hospital. So it was perfectly captured the tone of what the Rocketeer was based on.
I got to say, reading if you've ever been to an amazing restaurant and they're just bringing out different things in every course, you go, oh, that's what reading this comic book is like.
Yeah.
And like right from the beginning, like, Chris Weston and Mark Waid also, like, I wouldn't really mention it, but like he did, like his the speech, the tone of the speech and the sort of style of talking was a lot of fun. And so like he did that really well, but then that art was fantastic. And then you get to that splash page at the second page of, you know, Darwin's story, you know, where she's flying in the garters and you just, oh, you know, and then you see her flipping around and then you're like, what else could there be? And then you get to the third story and, oh, Gene Ha.
You're skipping that. I mean, the they could have published the Darwin story alone and it would have been great. But then to see a double page Jeff Darrow piece with Cliff fighting Nazi planes, it's amazing with all the detail that Jeff Darrow brings to it. And I love that Cliff's got the machine guns with the clips that are taped to the to each other. Like, just the level of detail that Darrow does, and this pinup is just amazing. But then, you know, like you said, then you go, it segues right into the Gene Ha story, which is, oh man.
So we had Chris Weston, we have Darwin Cook, we have Jeff Darrow, and then Gene Ha. I mean, you don't have a better looking book.
Yep.
Not only this week, but I can't remember the last time, you know.
Oh.
Put it up against any book.
It's really getting to the point where I'm like trying to explain it, and I just want to go,
Yeah, no, that's all you can do is, yeah, yeah.
I mean,
in this story, the Rocketeer's fighting another guy with this flying contraption, which is this one's all made out of helicopter blades, and it's against the backdrop of a giant prize fight happening in the city, and so the fight in the sky is contrasted against the fight in the boxing match. Through the radio broadcast, so the narration is for the boxing match, but it matches what's going on in the fight.
I love that. I mean, it's something. It's not something completely original, but I love when it works, and it was good. I love that premise.
And it works here because in the middle of the boxing fight, they keep cutting in, going, "Something's happening downtown. It may not be another Japanese attack because it's happening in the 40s."
Right.
So it was just very nicely contrasted, writing wise, but art wise, you know, we don't get enough Gene Ha in our lives, and this just reminds me of how great. Remember when Top Ten was coming out regularly, and he was like one of the best guys drawing comics. And
oh yeah, no doubt. And every time he does show up, it's like a thing of wonder. The story here is by Lowell Francis too, whose name I don't know, but he needs to get some credit because
he did a great job. Yeah, yeah.
So this as a package, as Josh said, you get three different tastes, three different kind of stories, three different well put together, incredibly drawn stories. There are lots of fun. There's no continuity. You can jump right in. You don't have to know anything about the characters. You don't have to have bought issue one. You can just buy issue two. Although one is great too, if you want to buy that as well. That's what's great about this.
One was great. I mean, I loved one. I mean, I know
one was great. But if you just want to get this one, you can.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, these are totally standalone, and I would get it. I would absolutely get it just to get a taste of the Rocketeer, and then if you like it, go back and get the original Dave Stevens stuff because it's amazing. But what I love about these anthologies is that each in the last issue with Cassaday and Allred, and with this issue, each creative team brought their own little bit of magic to it. Mm-hmm. And like the little in the Gene Ha Lowell Francis story, like the guy holding the pig,
yeah,
like what, like it, but it's just it's there and it makes sense and it's great and I just love and it's such I love this time period and you know it's you know the Mark Waid Chris Weston story, you know, they I like how they, you know, because the original Dave Stevens stuff happened, the first story was in L.A. and then he moved to New York, but like Waid and Weston brought him up to San Francisco, you know, in this we see, you know, it gets closer to World War II. In the last issue we saw him, you know, fighting in World War II, and the Jeff Darrow piece is fighting, you know, Nazis. It's just like I like how they're expanding the world of the Rocketeer, which Dave Stevens didn't get the opportunity to, so it's nice.
The thing about this is every time we talk about an anthology issue, something like that. We can always point to one and be like, oh, well, you know, the issue's really good, but this one really makes it worth it. Any one of the three stories in this would make the issue worth it. It doesn't matter what the other two were.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And that's what's remarkable.
And when you get three all together, then it's bonus. Yeah. So
also, I really want a jetpack.
Yeah, that would be cool.
When I was a kid, there's nothing I wanted more than a jetpack, and now I think I kind of want a jetpack again.
All right, fair enough. Keep dreaming.
Now, I know you just burn your feet. Many people were shocked and dismayed that Ultimate Spider-Man number 160 was not the pick of the week. This was the final issue of the series.
Yeah. Yep.
The death of Peter Parker, supposedly.
Yep.
We try to keep it separate, but this was a case of the marketing of the book lessening the impact of the story.
Totally. Don't get me wrong. This is the first book I read. I sat down to read it. And while it's some top Bagley stuff, I think some of the best stuff from Bagley we've seen in a long time, I think it all culminated in this issue. I finished and I was just like, eh. Yeah. Like it completely took away from my enjoyment of the book. Again, I don't know why it was polybagged. You know, to make a collectible
exactly. It's the same thing with Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
To make it a collectible.
Because it worked.
Yeah. And apparently every 1 in 300 had a signed copy, supposedly. So, but yeah. I've yet to hear anybody who got one. So, but yeah, I guess it worked. But like the marketing and the announcement of it on Tuesday, and we knew, like, I knew how it ended. And like, and normally in the past couple of years, I've built up this tolerance and this ability to not be affected, but like when Captain America died, like I knew Captain America's died, but I was like, all right, well, I want to see how Brubaker did it. Mm-hmm.
It worked for Johnny. We knew it was going to happen, but yeah. I thought that issue was much better.
Yeah.
This was, I want to be clear, like it was good.
I gave it a solid 4 stars.
Right. Yeah. It was good.
It was good, but it was a little bit by the numbers, and that all the beats that you hit, you go, yeah, okay, that's what's supposed to happen there. And that's this. Like Mary Jane had a really big moment and it was good, but it's sort of – it's funny because at the end of the last one, Aunt May had a big moment where she fired the gun.
Yep.
But that didn't really come to anything. And so in this one, Mary Jane had a big moment, which did sort of matter. And I liked the progression of, you know, beating the Green Goblin with a truck.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. You know, the art really worked. The moment, you know, it hit me, there was a moment where I didn't tear up, but I did get chills. I'll give you that.
That's the thing is that I didn't tear up at all.
And it was the second to last page when she says not him too, which I thought, well, that's fair. That's reminding us that she's had a lot of loss.
Yeah, which I got that, but for some reason, and you know me, I'll cry at the drop of a hat in a comic book. But like I didn't get that emotional when reading this book, and I don't know if it's because it's been called Death of Spider-Man, it's been telegraphed for issues, or if the fact that this whole arc got, I feel like after reading it, this got really drawn out. Like, you know what it feels like? It feels like a piece of bubble gum that you take two hands and you stretch, or like a Silly Putty, and it just got stretched across 3 or 4 issues. And I just it was good, but it didn't blow me away.
You're Bilbo Baggins having lived too long.
Yeah, I think so.
Butter scratched over too much toast.
Yeah, exactly.
The only thing I did think of that was, you know, emotional was that if you think about the entire work as a whole, I'm talking about the whole series, 160 issues.
Yeah,
it is a nice culmination.
Yes,
and I almost thought, you know, I don't necessarily need to read any more Ultimate Spider-Man now.
Right, I'd rather stop at the Somni issue. That's my end. I still go back to saying that's my end of Ultimate Spider-Man.
it really does cap the journey, and it does make it for an interesting, complete story. In that, you know, in quote reality, this kid would probably get killed.
Yep.
So if you take the whole thing as a whole, all 10 plus years, it's probably a nice ending. But as a single issue and as an end to the story and as a issue that's supposed to give me a lot of emotional impact, it didn't really resonate as much as I was hoping it would.
Yeah, me too.
See, for me, I think that I know that 160 issues is a long time. They've been doing it for a very long time. But I felt like they had just set up this paradigm that was very interesting, and it felt like, okay, wait, but it was really good, and there really felt like there were a lot of stories to tell with all the, you know, super friends or living together or whatever, you know.
They didn't last for like a year.
Yeah.
I know, but like.
There's still more. You could have milked that for a while too, yeah.
Yeah, no, like it just felt like it was premature, I suppose. Like I don't want this character to be done with. And I know that like there's a thing, like there's things that come to a natural end that you want to keep going. But I felt like it was, well, what are you doing it now for? We just, like he was just starting to train with S.H.I.E.L.D. and that, like that was really interesting.
Yeah.
Like that could have kept going. I would have liked to see the next phase of Peter Parker, you know, going from teenage, you know, to his, you know, I guess his young 20s. I know we've been through all this before, but not in the same way, not with this incredible continuity of creator.
But you know what you're going to get now?
Somebody else in a suit.
Some kind of new Spider-Man you don't even know about.
Is he in a black suit?
Yeah.
Actually, yes.
I know. I think it's a little bit of like, I don't know why you have to end it now. Because sometimes like it ends, you feel like now's the time to end it.
Right.
You know, like even if you don't want it to, I understand, you know, Starman could have kept going on forever, but I didn't want it to end.
Right.
That kind of thing.
It's tough. It's a challenge. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the right thing is. I mean, I could have gladly kept on reading Bendis and whatever artists that he brought onto this book and tell stories of Peter Parker for another 10 years. I would have gladly done that. And the thing is, I'll buy the new book. I'll try the new number
sure.
one. I'll see because he's proven himself and that sort of thing. It's just that this ending of this character in this issue just really it just didn't. Everybody's like, and I'm looking on Twitter and stuff like that. People are raving about it and talking about it. And I don't know how much of that has been just drinking his own Kool-Aid or whatever. But like, I was just like, it's just another story. Yeah.
Well, you know, and even the our site, you know, people are very into it. We're going to get to that later. But it's interesting. We all sort of felt the same way about it. I guess we've been talking to each other.
We have again reached a chord.
That's the theme of this episode.
We're going to have to cancel the show after this.
All right. Well, maybe it's time to end things. Maybe it is.
Josh.
Yes. Thunderbolts number 159.
Fables 106.
I know, but I was switching them. In a way, I'm going to talk about Thunderbolts first. It was actually a lot like the Rocketeer in that all of a sudden I noticed that there was this sort of grouping of artists doing these little short stories. And I'd heard about this before. Somebody was actually complaining about it. I was like, oh, that's not going to be good. And then I saw who it was, and I was very pleasantly surprised by it.
Yeah.
You had Jeff Parker and Declan Shalvey doing sort of the main part of the story, which is
the Underbolts.
Yeah. The raft's been blown up, and there's these two groups that have to come together and all the intrigue going on between them. It was great, just like it had been. After that, Joe Caramagna, the letterer, did a little story about Moonstone in the women's part of the prison. Then Jen Van Meter did a story with Eric Canetti, about Ghost and John Walker, the warden of the prison, the most kick-ass wheelchair-bound dude you'll ever see in your life. And I was like, oh, Eric Canetti, I need more of that. That was a lot of fun. And at the end, there was a fun little Crossbones story written by Frank Thierry with art by Matthew Southworth.
It was great to see Matt Southworth. I mean, unfortunately, it was Thierry, though.
I know what you're doing here. But like, it started, I was like, who's this art? This looks a little bit familiar because he did Stumptown for Oni, but I haven't seen him do anything else. He's worked on stuff, but you probably didn't see it. Inks and things like that. But that was fun. It's just a good little sort of group of short stories all put together. And for some reason, I've loved this title. Since Jeff Parker took over, I've just had like a ton of fun with it. I really like this in a way that I haven't since, you know, the original Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
My enthusiasm is waning. I think almost every book that Fear Itself is tied in has hurt the book.
Yeah.
Hurt momentum, hurt the stories. I don't really care about what's going on here. I didn't really, you know, finally seeping into, like, I liked the last Secret Avengers, but this week's Secret Avengers I didn't like. So it's just like everything that's tying in and stopping the story that I was, like, enjoying is really hurt for me. And I don't know that, in the same way that I'm dropping off Hulk, I might be dropping off the Thunderbolts.
Well, I agree with that. It's just I thought Parker in the main story, at least, did a good job of having the characters that he's been working on deal with what's going on in Fear Itself while still moving that story forward. I mean, maybe,
there's a continuity to it.
Yeah, there is. And the thing is that shit happens and they're dealing with it, but like, it's not, I don't feel as it's a complete and total interruption like with Secret Avengers, which I agree with you, and another bad issue with Secret Avengers. But I see your point there. I mean, and ultimately, like, I kind of groaned a little when I saw this was like a bit of an anthology, you know, kind of shorter, you know, I don't know why they would do double size special of it or anything like that. But I did enjoy them. I love these characters. I thought they were great creators. So we'll see how it survives.
Yeah. It was very much designed for my tastes, so I was like, you know, I was like fine with that.
Yeah.
Next up, I want to talk about Fables number 106, and I didn't really expect this. This is part 5 of the Super Team book, and this sort of closed out the big second story, the big threat of that, or at least appears to have. If you'll remember, I think around issue 75, the sort of first way, you know, epoch of Fables ended with the adversary, and then there was this Mr. Dark character, and there was a big fight. And there was all these sort of full page panels, and it's over. And so I don't know what's next, although there's a hint coming up that there is a third thing that's going to happen. But it was kind of like from out of nowhere, and it was well written and well drawn and everything, but it just kind of felt like this left turn, like this U-turn, like, no, we're not going to go there. It's fine. This is done. Oh, okay. Well, that's all right. But they made it interesting. Let's see. That was 30 issues ago, basically. And we did this, and now there's another thing. So I guess I don't know what's going to come next. So I'm kind of looking forward to it. Mark Buckingham and Steve, I can never say his name, Lealoha, there it is, did a really fantastic job on this. It was a really good-looking book. It's fun as always.
You ready, Ron?
Let's do it. Flashpoint time.
So we were wrong last week. We've got one more week of Flashpoint after this.
Never ends. Issues.
One more week. We really thought it was over.
Yeah.
So Flashpoint, Kid Flash lost 1 of 3. Ron.
Awful art. Really bad art.
It was, I wouldn't say awful, but it was serviceable, I thought.
It wasn't great,
but...
This is tapping into what's going on with Bart Allen, who I guess is in the Flashpoint universe, but he's regular DCU Bart, and he's Brainiac is using him as a time anomaly in the future.
So Bart would be the third character now who's in the Flashpoint universe who's from the DC original DCU and knows about it, including Barry and Booster Gold.
But like Back to the Future, he's fading away.
Yeah.
Which they actually, he held up his hand, and instead of his hand being translucent or transparent, he made his skin translucent, which I was like, oh, okay. But
he's going to have to play Earth Angel soon.
I know, exactly. I'm not going to stick with this one.
Okay. I will, only because I want to know about these characters that are, remembering the old world.
All right, fair enough.
Flashpoint, Lois Lane, and the Resistance, number 1.
Abnett and Lanning.
3. Abnett and Lanning. Now, in this case, I thought the art really hurt the story.
Agreed.
This was really sort of below caliber art for a big two comic.
Agreed. Well, just it's important to note that the art on Kid Flash was by Oliver Noem, mm-hmm. and the art on Lois Lane is by Eddie Nunez. So.
I liked the story. The idea that Lois was trapped. She was covering a fashion show in Europe Paris. when the war happened, and now she's trapped behind enemy lines, and Cyborg needs her to be a secret agent because his secret agent, who was Jimmy Olsen, was killed in the flood. That was a good story. The story was good, but it was really hard to get past the art.
Yep. I agree.
So I'm on the fence because I really want to follow the story. I think Abnett Lanning, between this and Wonder Woman, are doing a good job of, you know, taking care of the European theater in this war. But
do you think with all these miniseries and all these new series, that DC just stretched themselves too thin and they just had to start grabbing whoever they could get?
Yep. Well, they had everybody else was busy doing their new books.
Yep.
Yeah.
So they had to get some dudes not doing the books.
I'm not going to stick with Lois Lane.
Okay.
Even though
so it's 0 for 2.
0 for 2, yep.
Now, The Outsider, Flashpoint The Outsider number 1 of 3, written by James Robinson and drawn by Javi Hernandez. I almost went to Tom Cater's there for a second.
written by James Robinson.
I really like this.
I love this. This was great.
I love that it was almost unconnected to the Flashpoint universe. Even though there was Flashpoint characters, it was completely about this character in India who's a superhero but maybe a supervillain. It's kind of like an Indian Lex Luthor.
Yep. And so this outsider is not Alfred, as was speculated. It's somebody else. And
he could be nobody. It could just be a character they've made up, which is fine.
Well, the outsider and the look of that, I mean, the outsider was Alfred back in the day.
He's not in this book, so he could just be a character they've made
up. Well, they mentioned Alfred in what was it? Was it in Lois Lane or was it in this book?
One of the two. He was killed.
Yeah, he was killed. I think it might have been Lois Lane, or maybe it was this book. I forget. Oh no, it was this book. It's right here. It's when the outsider's drinking his tea and he's talking to one of his workers. He says, "Any word from Agent in England?" You know,
right.
and then he says, "Was you referred to him in the past tense?" Alfred Pennyworth, sir. He was captured by the Amazon. Soon he sent his last word and beheaded. Right. Death confirmed. Yeah. So
in this issue, this is a sort of an Indian It's hard to categorize what he is. We'll just call him like a Lex Luthor. He's got an organization. They run everything. They run businesses. They run guns. They run, you know, they have agents all over the place. And he gets attacked by Mr. Terrific and Mr. Terrific's wife, who's, I guess, Miss Terrific.
Yeah, Mr. and Mrs. Terrific. Yeah, the whole.
And then somebody else, and they kill
that
Mr.
Terrific.
That
makes sense.
And it was fun. It was interesting. It was action packed in the big fight scene in the middle. I really liked this.
It was
a lot,
great.
Surprisingly.
My favorite aspect of it was that it ties into Flashpoint when in the issue in Flashpoint 2 or 1 or whatever, when Cyborg has the meeting of all the heroes, and basically. The Outsider was in India for that movie and hologrammed in, but his workers just had a hologram version of him, and he popped out of the meeting and he's just doing business. And then he's like, "Oh wait, hold on, I want to talk here." And they're like, "Okay, you're live." And then he that was great. It was such a good device.
This was surprising. I put it down. I was like, "Wow, I gave it 5 stars in that family."
Yeah,
it was really
this
fun.
Was great. The cover was awesome.
Kevin Nolan cover. Yeah.
This was great. So I'm sticking with this one definitely.
I'm gonna go get this one.
Finally, Flashpoint Reverse Flash, which says 1 of 3, but I'm pretty sure it's a one shot.
Oh, really? No, I think it's 1 of 3, isn't it?
It ends with the end, and there's no more. There's no more issues of it.
Oh, maybe. My question about this one is: what's worse? What's worse, Scott Collins drawing his new style, or Scott Collins writing the comic and someone else trying to ape Scott Collins' new style?
This might have been the worst of the three
yes.
in terms of art.
Yeah.
I mean, this you had three of these issues with really substandard art.
Yep.
Really hard to take. This was interesting. Really, along with Wonder Woman, this should have been one of the first ones out.
Yep.
Because it really explains how the Reverse Flash has gotten to the point where he's going to change the world or the timeline.
Yeah, and this gives us a little more insight into what he's doing, and what I thought was really interesting and what was good writing was him going back and experimenting with things. He's like, all right, well, if I stop Barry from becoming the Flash, then I don't become Reverse Flash. Okay, so he's got to become the Flash. Okay, so how can I screw with him this way? All right, well, let me take away his best friend as a child. And it was really interesting to see him experimenting in the time stream to see what the effects of his tinkering would be.
Yes, how far he could go before he was himself taken out of the time stream.
Yeah, which I thought was great, except that... Except
I like
that,
when he made Barry bad at baseball.
Yeah, that was funny. He just moved his hand midway. But the problem with it was that right out of the gate you had Joel Gomez trying to do Scott Collins' style, and then towards the end, actually, I wouldn't say the art in this was as bad as Lois Lane or as Kid Flash, because there were moments where I'm like, oh, I'd like to see Joel Gomez do his own thing. Like
no, it's the superhero stuff where it was really
yeah.
tough. It was the
Barry
the
as a
stuff,
kid. The shot
that
of Barry,
good looking.
Yeah,
stuff,
the shot
yeah.
of Barry as a kid reading the comic book. I was like, oh, that's a really nice panel, you know. But it's when the superhero stuff and the grimacing and the trying to do Scott Collins' shtick wasn't working for me. So
I wonder if the shot of Barry reading the comic is the actual style he draws in, and the rest
yeah.
was trying to ape it, and that's where it became really bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Because clearly he's got talent. That,
yes,
the childhood stuff is really good. It's the Barry fighting Reverse Flash in the future stuff, which was really really rough.
Yep, agreed. But yeah, I might stick with it if it is an ongoing. If it's not a one shot, I might stick with it just because to see what the Reverse Flash is doing. So.
Yeah,
so I'm like 1.5 out of 4.
There not the strongest week for books. No. I'm looking at the checklist here in the back. And I'm not seeing any of the Reverse Flash issues.
Okay, so maybe
I'm thinking they just made a mistake on the cover treatment.
They're just running fast and loose, aren't they?
There's a couple interns and a monkey running in DC. Over there.
A monkey.
He does copy editing. That's what the problem is.
It's one of Grodd's.
He doesn't.
He's got a red pen. These don't make any sense at all.
All right. So I want to take a quick moment out to tell everybody about Graphically. iFanboy is part of the greater Graphically universe, and Graphically is bringing digital comics to you on the web as well as on your mobile devices. The new Graphically website has been out for a couple of weeks, and it's solid. It's a lot of you have been checking it out and interacting with it, and it's a great place to read comics. Reading comics on the web is much more evolved and better now. And now you can take those comics that you like and go embed them on your own site or on other message boards or sites like that by just grabbing the embed code, like kind of like like a YouTube video, but for comics. Got new comics rolling out every day. There's no new comic book day in the digital world. It comes out every day. So go to Graphly.com to check that all out. You can also get the Graphly apps for the iPhone, the iPad, or an Android device, whether you have a tablet or a phone. And check out, you know, there's some great free comics. Check out Rest from Top Cow. It's totally free, the whole series that comes out every week, so every Thursday. So check out the new issues from there, as well as tons and tons and tons of other great stuff. Every Tuesday we do Top Cow Tuesday, where Top Cow series is on sale, as well as there's a couple of great publishers that are coming on board in the next couple of weeks. So you want to stay tuned as things are getting bigger and better over at Graphly. Be sure to follow them on Twitter.com/Graphly, so you don't miss a thing. Go to Graphly.com to check it all out.
Conan Road of Kings, this is the thing about Conan, is that I sometimes I will read it and I'll like, oh, it's really good, and then I won't really want to go back. Like, I just wanted a little bit. Road of Kings was a 6-issue miniseries, but I think it's continuing, like in August, it said the back of the issue. And I read through the whole thing. For some reason, it was really fun. Whatever the combination of Roy Thomas and Mike Hawthorne was, it was just good all the way through of
Did
this story.
Did he cut
story.
Off anybody's head?
I'm fairly certain.
Did he bet a maiden?
He was a little, there was a moment at the end where it was great because they're running away and like he saved the princess and everything's fine and they're going and she's like, now we can spend the rest of our life together. And he literally was like, hold on a second. I gotta go. No, he totally did that. He was like, you know, that was fun and all and you were with me when you got kidnapped, so I took that, but I'm going to go. I'm going to go now. And Thor was like, me understand, yes.
Conan and Thor commiserating at a bar.
That's how me feel too.
there's a joke in there somewhere.
they get attached when you save them.
They try put leash on Thor.
Thor not down.
Listen, Thor like wind. Can't control. Must blow where blow.
Oh wow, okay. yeah. Before I get to the next book, we should quickly mention Justice League Subway Famous Fans number 2 of 4, which came out in the middle of DC Books this week. And this time we featured the NASCAR driver Carl Edwards and the NBA player Blake Griffin, who defeat Gorilla Grodd by bouncing a basketball off his head.
Yep, I did capture that moment as well, so yes.
Quick, Grodd has completely taken control of the JSA. How can we defeat him? Bounce a basketball off his head.
There you go. Is that going to make the best panels this week?
Maybe. I haven't decided yet. Game over for Grodd.
Finally, we get to finish our awesome Subway sandwiches. Yeah, looking good, guys.
It was less. I gotta give the first one the little bit of the edge. Yeah, because the first one. Yeah, you didn't have Grodd actually going for the sandwich, really.
Grodd should have been seen. He should have smelled that sandwich, been like meat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Pulled his giant spoon out and gone for it. All right. So let's get to Superman 712, which was the bait and switch of the week. as often happens with DC books, we had a completely different solicitation than what actually came out. This was not the story of Superman walking the Earth. He was supposed to be in Los Angeles this week talking, hanging out with a Muslim superhero. Instead, we got a lost story of Krypto,
yeah,
which was written by Kurt Busiek and drawn by Rick Leonardi. And it was all right. it takes place after Infinite Crisis when Superboy died, and it features basically Krypto trying to find Superboy, you know, his buddy. You can't find him. He follows the scent trail. It goes to places where Superboy had been right before Infinite Crisis, and then ties it all together with the death. It was all right, but it was, for whatever reason, they pulled the story. Whether you want to believe it's because they didn't want more Muslim superhero backlash, or because of the cat saving scene, depending on who you believe, depending on what you wanted to believe, they pulled it and inserted this one. And yeah, so who knows?
Doesn't matter anyway. It's all going to end in September.
Superman stumbling towards the retcon.
Yes, there you go.
Possibly can go.
Oh well,
he's no longer walking. He's just dragging one foot along.
Real quickly, only because I've pimped it enough this week, probably. But All Nighter #1 from Image Comics by David Hahn. If you like relationship books, you need to be reading this. It was the subject of our Don't Miss podcast earlier this week. Great black and white story that was supposed to be a Minx book that Image got the rights to and is releasing as a 5-issue miniseries. It's done, so it's going to release on time, monthly. A lot of fun, cool punk chick who is also a petty thief trying to grow up in this rough world. So I loved it. This book was great. I can't wait for the next issue. Please check it out because it's awesome.
You may recall last time in John Byrne's Next Men #6, one of the characters was going to go save Abraham Lincoln from assassination, and the issue ended with with her having fired a bullet at Booth.
Yeah, so what happened there?
Well, in number seven, it Love immediately it. Goes to a different story.
Of course
all
it
I wanted
does.
To know what was going to happen with Abraham Lincoln.
Yep.
And first of all, I don't know any of these characters. I literally am reading this solely for the Lincoln connection because I find that fascinating.
Yep.
It goes to another story. I just basically skipped through that looking for the Lincoln pages, found them where basically after much discussion, they decide to save Lincoln. So in this issue, Lincoln grows to old age, becomes an elder statesman, and he's like, we see like gray-haired Lincoln, you know, being the most revered man in America. It was bizarre.
Well, that's to be expected from John Byrne. So.
Yeah. So
anyway, all right.
The last time that Gates of Gotham was talked about on the show, I think I was off of it, so I didn't really get a chance to talk about it.
Correct.
I really like this book. Is basically what I wanted to say. Connor, did you – I don't know if I enjoyed it a little more because I recently read Devil in the White City because mm-hmm. they were talking about architecture and like it's that same sort of Gilded Age period.
Right.
Like that will never stand up under – and I don't know if it was just like I had a little bit of architecture geek in me. So that might make it
nice
more interesting to me.
I liked it more than the first issue because there was much more in the past, which is really mm-hmm. what I'm interested in this story.
Yeah.
In this. I like this more than the first one. And I like the first one. I just didn't love it as much as I hoped. This one was better, I thought, once I've sort of found the world. And I like the idea that the Gates of Gotham title is not only the bridges which were blown up in the first issue, but also now we find out the name of a family. So they are the Gates of Gotham, like the Richards of Long Island or whatever you want to call it. So,
the revered Richards of Long Island.
So like the Gatsbys, the Gatsbys yeah. and the Richards. So I like that little twist on the title, which we find out in the end, the villains are the Gates family. Mm-hmm. So... it's very good. It's very much feet in two worlds in the future. Robin and not Batgirl. What's her name?
Cassandra Cain.
Black Bat or
Black Bat. Black Bat. Yep.
Investigating what's going on, and in the past we learned more about the how Gotham came to be with the building of the large buildings and all that stuff. So
yeah, I was down with it.
It was very good.
All right, so those are the books that we enjoyed this week, but a whole bunch more came out, and you folks over at ifanboy.com went over and did your pull lists and your ratings and your reviews and pick of the weeks, and Josh, why don't you walk us through the top five picks of the weeks according to the iFanboy audience.
Number five, Planet of the Apes, number three with 2.7%.
Wow.
None of us read that.
Well, this week there was – we'll see at the end. There's a reason why. There weren't very many picks.
Yeah,
right?
So, that's true.
What you would normally see in the top five. We're in the top five plus – much lower percentage.
Number four, Rocketeer Adventures number two, 3.6%. Crime. You're wrong, people. You're just wrong. Number three, Gates of Gotham number two with 4.4%. Number two, Fables number 106 with 4.8%. See, I read quality books this week. And number one, Ultimate Spider-Man number 160. Even though you knew what was going to happen, it was in the title. 75.3%.
That's amazing.
For a while, it was at like 97%.
Yeah, yeah. So, we're recording this. You know, people. This is as we're recording, so people come back and do their picks of the week over the weekend or things like that. So these numbers might fluctuate when you hear this, but I doubt Ultimate Spider-Man is going to lose that lead. That's ridiculously high. So,
yeah.
So
at one point, there was like four books total that had been chosen. It was like 98% for Ultimate Spider-Man.
That's insane. So on to the user reviews. Smasher reviewed Justice League of America number 58, gave the story a 3 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5, and not surprisingly, nobody made this their pick of the week. And Smasher says that while some of the dialogue in this issue read hackneyed and his use of Blue Starman in the shade just feels like dirty pool, this issue was a thrill. I jumped on with this issue and sunk right in. No heavy narration boxes required. The pace was quick, yet I felt like a lot happened, and the ending was as cliffhanging as they come. This may be the last great JLA story of the DCU as we know it. Eclipse has split the moon in half, and the Earth is falling to bits. Only the Justice League can save the world, and it's a Justice League full of substitutes. Good thing there's a reboot. Okay, so a couple of things about this issue. Number one, I love the fact that he just jumped in. You know, like we're 3 months away from it all ending, and I'm gonna try it. You know, like hey, issue 58, sure, I'll jump right in. That's good. I like that because we always encourage that.
But if it wasn't for his rating of threes on everything, I was thinking about it from his description.
Yeah,
this does sound great.
I know, but I did read this issue, and I do want to point out that while I am a big fan of James Robinson's work and things like that, we don't all have our best moments, and there's literally a panel, and I need to read this because there's literally a panel in this where the Justice League is trying to figure out what to do, and Batman says to Obsidian, "You mentioned the Shade Obsidian and how he's important to all this, right?" So basically, Batman's asking the Obsidian to explain why Shade is important, and Obsidian's response is, "Well, you worked that out too, Batman. Why don't you tell everyone?" And then Batman then says, "Like, why did you do that?"
Yeah, it seems like a waste.
And then the other problem is that Donna Troy died at the end of this issue.
Whoa! Yes. No warning.
Sword through the chest. Eclipso killed Donna Troy. So
that's why she was removed from the cover of Justice League International.
Yeah, exactly.
They should just wholesale slaughter everybody. It doesn't matter now.
Exactly. Ragnarok. Just have everyone die in a big.
I'm telling you that's gonna move units.
Yeah.
Imagine that. That's how they should have ended the whole thing, don't you think?
That would have been great. Yeah, just the
tell like a big final story they never could tell anyway. Like have a big battle or every, you know.
Whatever happened to the heroes of tomorrow?
Is that the title of the book?
Yeah.
All right, Mike's positive review. Action Comics 902 gave the story a 1 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And again, no one made us a pick of the week. And Mike Positive, who's testing the limits of his name here, says, "At the end of it all, I was glad this version of the DCU is ending so I can try forgetting this ever happened. It's too bad that Paul Cornell dropped the ball this issue as the art was great. Kenneth Rocafort draws some beautiful stuff, especially the shots of Lois and Jimmy waiting for destruction, Superman valiantly pushing off the ship from crashing into Earth, the impact itself, and a weakened Superman stumbling ashore. I cannot recommend this issue, but it's worth flipping through to see some pretty pictures and how Rocafort tries to deal with drawing different versions of the already goofy Doomsday in a story where these Doomsdays aren't even painted as threats." And Rocafort is...
I love Rocafort, but I flipped through this and I just feel like this is the wrong book for him. You know, it's like the wrong pairing.
He's not the right style for Superman, which it's the same worry with Jim Lee. Yep. It's not the right sort of iconic look, but he is fantastic.
Yeah, he's great. Cool.
Story not so good.
All right, so go to ifanboy.com/comics where you can do your pull list and you can rate your books and write reviews and might get on the show, and it's all at ifanboy.com.
Speaking of ifanboy.com, if you like this show or the other shows we do, the video shows, the other podcasts, the website, all that stuff, you were thinking, you know, I'd like to take a hand in this and really, really help out and support. Well, there's lots of ways to do that, and we would very much appreciate it if you would. You can click on any of the banners on ifanboy.com, support the sponsors. They are the lifeblood. They're the people who support the show, and it's very easy for you to go and check that stuff out. You can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, and anything you buy from Amazon, we'll sort of get a little piece of that, a little something, and then that's one very easy way. In order to do that, there's a little powered by Amazon button under the search box, and that'll take you right to Amazon, then it won't look like it has anything to do with us, but it will. And anything you buy is very good. That's very helpful. And then finally, the most direct way to help support iFanboy is to become a member. You can either donate $4 a month or $42 a year or $10 a month or $100 a year. It's sort of a regular thing, a way of keeping the lights on and keeping things running. You guys are the ones who do that. And it's really important that you know that. And I was thinking about it last night and I was like, man, that's awesome. Thank you so much, everybody who does that. But it's not just the feeling of actually contributing and making it work and just doing that because you're a good person. We also try to reward you for some of that stuff. So we have stuff that we give away to members only and things like that. We've done a bunch of – we've got to have something coming up relatively soon.
Josh visits your house and gives you a hug.
Yeah, I would totally do that.
That's going to be the July giveaway.
If you live in my neighborhood. But besides that, when you do sign up, you'll get a packet of stickers, buttons, and if it's a higher level, you get a T-shirt. And then that incredibly self-righteous feeling of saying I did the right thing. Instead of buying some premium coffee every week that I didn't want, I helped these guys do this great show that it is such a big part of my comic book life. Seriously.
Anything more to heap on there?
Yeah, any more guilt or anything?
Can you tell I listen to public radio?
Yeah, I can, actually. Yeah. Cool. Right.
Listen, at least we don't do pledge drives.
True. It's true. Yet.
All right. So thanks very much.
We don't have the overhead yet.
That's ifanboy.com/store if you decide you want to take the plunge into membership.
Thank you. Emails, Connor.
Matt D. from Rochester, New York says, "Love the show. I've got a fashion question. When going to a comic book movie, is it bad form to wear a T-shirt of the character in that movie? Like wearing a Green Lantern T-shirt to the movie. Everyone knows you don't wear the band's T-shirt when you go see them in concert. Do the same unwritten rules of cool apply to your local multiplex?"
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I have an anecdote about this.
And go ahead.
This is a friend of mine, and I apologize in advance if he didn't want me telling the story, but I've heard him tell others, and that's fine. Friend of mine, huge Judge Dredd fan. Enormous Judge Dredd fan. So excited in the 90s when the Judge Dredd movie came out. he was younger, you know, teen years, wore his Judge Dredd 2000 AD shirt that he ordered from England, had it proudly wearing, went into the movie, sat down and watched the worst piece of shit Sylvester Stallone raping of the character he loved. He just sank in his seat and was so embarrassed he took the shirt off and turned it inside out to walk out without anyone noticing that he was wearing the Judge Dredd shirt.
Wow.
That's why you don't wear the shirt of the character to the movie, because the movie might not be good. So.
Well, here's the thing. This depends on who you are and how.
No. No, nope. Don't wear the shirt. Don't wear the – be cool. Don't wear
I'm
the shirt.
I'm not going to do that. People like to wear their shirt.
Nope.
They like
I would
to
say
do
not
thing.
To.
Don't wear the shirt.
You guys aren't going to. Listen, I'm a vain motherfucker. I'm not going to.
You know, did he just say he finally
admitted
he's vain?
I do a comic book video show, and I've never worn a comic book shirt on it. That's how I feel about it. But I'm not going to – if you want to do that, then go for it.
Dude, nope.
You have some colored lantern shirt. You got the Hope or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, same thing.
We didn't say don't own the shirt.
I didn't say don't own the shirt. Don't wear it to the movie.
Say to the movie.
It's the same thing. Yeah. So you're gonna go see what band do you like these days? I don't even know what you like.
Are you gonna wear
a Decemberist shirt to go see the Decemberists?
I'm not gonna.
Right.
You bought a shirt and you wore it out.
What shirt did I wear out?
You get a Decemberist hoodie or something?
Oh yeah, I wore it out. Yeah, I wore it. You don't wear it to the hoodie's a different thing, but the t-shirt of the show.
Ah.
You know, I'm trying to remember if I've actually worn the December's hoodie to the December show. I might have, because that was like my hoodie's my uniform. Like that's right. You know, what it is. But
It's if you really want to, that's fine. I'm not going to come down before.
No, I mean, yes, the after school special, if you really want to do whatever makes you happy, that's fine. If you want to be cool, don't do it.
But technically, yes, it would be the same rule as the concert rule.
Yes.
I think that's fair.
Tim from Rhode Island says, I stayed away from Judd Winnick for a long time because I didn't enjoy his work on anything other than Pedro and Me. But it seems like lately he's been doing good work with Generation Lost and some of his Red Hood stuff. Is it worth going back and reading his earlier stuff? Mainly I was interested in his Green Arrow run, if his Green Arrow run was worth checking out. Thank you. You're welcome, Tim.
His Green Lantern run was really pretty good.
His Green Arrow run was good. We enjoyed it.
It was good.
Yeah,
it was very good.
Yeah, well, it was with Brick and the one. Yeah, that was good. That was enjoyable. Yeah.
The Green Arrow Black Canary stuff was especially good. And then it was good for a while after that when it was just solo Green Arrow. And then
I've been avoiding him.
I like that Judd's like, hey, come over here. And he's like,
No. And the thing is, he doesn't say, he just shakes it off, you know, like kind of does a half turn away.
Or his friend's like, hey, I want to go out for drinks. We're meeting up some people later. Is Judd going to be there?
Exactly. Oh, God. All right, so. If you have any awkward social questions or cool guidelines that you need answered, email us at contact@ifanboy.com.
Ah, oh, Judd's gonna be there.
I don't want to do that again.
Or he walks in the bar, sees Judd, turns right around and leaves. And when he even knows he showed up.
How come he didn't come the other night? Yeah,
I saw Judd checked in on Foursquare, and I just didn't do that.
Can't. I didn't like some of his stuff in the middle.
All right, so on to the voicemails. Our first voicemail has got a question about a big event.
Hey guys, this is Scott in Wiley, Texas. And I was calling because I wanted to ask you, did you like Fear Itself better when it was Blackest Night?
I think I see what you're getting at here.
Clever.
Ty? Yeah. You know, you have a little bit of a point. I'm not gonna lie. You know, I was like, oh, so it's just Fear Itself with Hammer, or it's just Blackest Night with Hammers? Okay. I did enjoy Blackest Night more than Fear Itself, at least up to this point. Yeah.
Well, I think part of the subtle difference is that Blackest Night was resurrecting dead characters, where Fear Itself is, you know, giving existing characters new powers or new, you know, kind of things. So there's a little more wonder, I think, with Blackest Night, because it was like, ooh, look, it's dead version of Aquaman, you know, or whatever, you know, whatever character it was. So.
But you also had characters like Lex Luthor getting a power ring. So similarly to that,
people
getting hammers who got new powers, it's similar.
Fair point.
I just think it's a better, so far at least, Black Knight was more tightly plotted at this point in this series.
Yeah.
It was
all over the map.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. How many issues are we in Fear Itself? Two or three?
I don't even know.
Three.
Yeah, I don't feel like I know what's happening really or care.
All right. But, yeah, I do too. I think it's moving too slowly, but we'll see. I don't know. But it's not over yet, so we'll see. All right, our next movie's our next voicemail's got a question about a movie.
Hey, iFanboy, this is Raphael. I was wondering what you guys think will happen with the Green Lantern movie since it did so bad at the box office the first week, and it's reported to cost like $200 million to make and $125 to $150 million to promote. I'm reading that like they're trying to point the finger at Geoff Johns, they're pointing the finger at the director. So I'm just wondering, do you guys think this movie will get a sequel, or are they done with this? And do you think this is a big setback for DC Entertainment? Other than that, I love the show. Thanks.
What do you mean, other than that? We didn't make the movie.
We're not affiliated with it.
Not Warner Brothers.
I think it's far too early to tell what the future of Green Lantern is.
Or DC movies.
Or DC movies, yeah.
I mean, it's clear. I mean, again, it's all speculation. You can't predict what Hollywood will do any less than you can predict what comic companies will do. But, yeah. I mean, Hellboy got a sequel and it made less than $100 million.
I mean, the thing about it is that, and I was actually glad to see, I thought the blowback this week was going to be much worse.
Yeah.
And I had a tweet already to be like, when did you make $50 million? You know, but that's not, I mean, yes, it wasn't an Iron Man, it's not going to be a $300 million revenue generating movie like Iron Man was. But honestly, what of these movies will be?
It didn't tank.
It didn't.
Well, not in the sense like, but you've seen movies that came out like a huge thing and they didn't make anything, yeah. You know, like
Tron.
You know, nothing. Yeah,
no.
Like
Tron did well. I mean, Tron. The thing is all about expectations, and Tron did well despite the expectations of which they wanted it to be Avatar. Tron did, when you total up all the money it made like $400 million.
Yeah. Well, that was my point, which is that it's been barely out for a week, and admittedly it did poorly in the foreign markets. It didn't do very well internationally, which normally is like for example X-Men First Class. Everyone's like, oh, it only did $50 million. Yeah, but it did like $70 million internationally. It didn't cost as much. But the thing is that for DC Entertainment, this is a long, at least from what I understand, this is a longer play, and that if all the Green Lantern shit they put out there in terms of merchandise sells and kids buy it, there will be another movie.
Yeah. And, I mean, like, when I think about tanking, though, like Jonah Hex did like 8.
Yeah, but you can't compare those two. Jonah Hex, they just got rid of, whereas this was marketed to the tune of $100 million. They had all their hopes and pinned on this movie. This is not the same thing as Jonah Hex. I mean, clearly they fell on their face out of the gate. Whether or not it's a fatal falling on the face, I doubt it, but they wanted this to be a big deal. Not only was it not a big deal money-wise, it was not a big deal critic-wise.
Yeah.
No one really, most people didn't like it. Some people liked it, but for the most part, didn't have the reaction that the other films have had. So this, as a jump starter to the whole DC Entertainment world of movies, it was not a good thing.
What I don't understand is the whole they already have Batman. That was their phenomenon. You know what I mean? Like that, so... You know, you got another Batman movie coming out next week.
Batman is like Spider-Man. The whole thing with Iron Man was they were able to make a movie based on characters that not everyone already knew. This is exactly correlated to Iron Man.
Yeah, fair enough.
But it's not as cool.
Yeah.
And it didn't do as well money-wise. It didn't do as well critic-wise. No one talks about it. I mean, when Iron Man came out, everyone was talking about it.
Yep, yeah.
Side of comics people I knew, it was all over the zeitgeist. Robert Downey Jr.'s career was resurrected. Everything was cool about it. Whereas this, everyone's sort of like, well, they saw it.
Yeah.
And my family doesn't even want to see it. They've seen every comic movie for the last 10 years.
Yep.
And they're all like, should we go to Green Lantern? And I was like, well. And then they said, yeah. I mean, they're not going to see it. So, I mean,
let's go to Super 8.
it's tough. But the thing is, you got to believe, I mean, like there was a mid-credit sequence teasing the future of it. You know, and like, while that, I know that doesn't mean anything, but you know, they put that in there with, you know, plans to do more. And like you said, Connor, it's unpredictable. I mean,
I would think that they sunk so much money into developing this whole, not just Green Lantern world, but the whole idea of the DC Entertainment thing, that they might want to do a sequel just to sort of A, save face, but B, prove that the investment was worth it.
Yeah.
Because if they make a sequel and it hits really big, then it won't matter what the first film did.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Batman Begins made $372 million worldwide. It didn't, it didn't blow the doors off anything. It made $200 million.
Yeah, but Dark Knight was a ridiculous success, though.
Right, but I'm saying is they...
But it was also a huge critical success.
But it wasn't a huge, like...
Phenomenon.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. But, and that's the problem also, is that I almost feel bad for the movie because I feel like the deck was stacked against it and that they were it's like the thing is, like, you can't make a phenomenon. The shit just happens. I don't think Marvel knew Iron Man was going to do what it was going to do. I think that was
I think everyone was surprised by how successful it was. It made $580 million.
But now they have to do it over and over again.
Right. Yeah, that's the other problem. They have the opposite problem. They have to keep meeting expectations.
Well, and that's been a lot of the talk this year. I mean, like, I was just reading an article the other day, and, like, if you look at Thor, X-Men First Class, and Green Lantern, none of those are runaway phenomenon kind of things, and questioning whether any of the movies this year will do that. And really, it's next year with the Spider-Man reboot, Avengers, and with the next Batman movie, where, like, that's where the real money's going to come from. And
well, it's funny because if you look. And the reason why I have all these numbers is because I've been compiling them to do a post about, you know, the movie grosses. But increasingly, and the reason why Green Lantern's foreign failure is a big deal is because increasingly these movies make way more money foreign.
Yeah.
I mean, Thor made $259 million domestically, but – I'm sorry, I made $175 million domestically, but I made $259 in the foreign market.
Yep.
So Thor's already over $400 million.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
X-Men First Class, which is still newer than Thor, is over $245 million total because it did way more in the foreign market.
Yeah.
So
the fact that Green Lantern opened at $17 million in the foreign market is not good.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but it was only in Budapest.
In the one
huge
theater,
huge Budapest. Anyway. They love green there. Is the thing.
So there's an Irish joke there that I could have made that I didn't. So. There you go. If you have any questions,
I don't think there was.
You can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Any questions or observations, please call in, and we'd love to hear from you. Keep them short. Keep them to about 30 seconds. And don't forget to tell us who you are and where you're from. So iFanboy Don't Miss, our podcast where we talk to creators about books that are coming up. Last week, this past Monday, we talked to David Hahn about All Nighter, which you should go back and listen to. And if you're looking for Don't Miss this Monday, it already came out this past Friday. So go back and look at your feed. And Paul's talking to Mike Carlin about the Canterbury Cricket Flashpoint book, Canterbury Cricket number 1. And we also got some preview pages of art from the book and stuff like that. So go download that, give it a listen, and give a Flashpoint book a shot. So, and also go to iTunes and subscribe to Don't Miss and leave a review while you're there.
You can go to iFanboy.com and check out my Pick of the Week review for the Rocketeer Adventures number 2, as well as all the other great writers we have going every day, putting out great content about the comic book culture we've got going on. There's Word Balloon. There's all kinds of things happening at iFanboy.com, including iFanboy.com/about, which has got links to all of our social networks where you can become our friend on Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. And in addition to this show and all the great content, we also have a video show that comes out every week, every Wednesday. Last week, we were talking about the DC reboot. We went through every book in the DC reboot.
Painstakingly so.
Painstakingly.
We weren't going to do that, and we couldn't help ourselves.
Yep, I knew it. Yep.
And this week, we've got the annual barbecue and email show.
The return of the barbecue, Vindication.
We missed it last year. We couldn't get it done, but we brought it back. So check that out. It was a very hungry editing session.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. As we said, keep it relatively short. Tell us who you are, where you're from. Get to the point, damn it. No, that's I don't mean to talk to you like that, baby. Please come back. About stuff you want to write in or talk to us about.
And as I mentioned, when we talk about Don't Miss, if you're in iTunes, please do a review for this show, for the video show, for Don't Miss, for all the other podcasts that we're affiliated with, like Word Balloon or Tom vs. Aquaman, which, by the way, Tom outdid himself with Warner vs. Aquaman. It was fantastic. So go to iTunes, leave a review for us, and help spread the word. Tell your mom, tell your friends, tell your comic book store buddies, tell everybody about iFanboy. We lean on you to spread the word, so please do. Thank you very much. So I think that's a good note to end this week's show on. So until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I am Joshua.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.